This is episode number 19 with Nick Onken. Welcome to the Rise Higher podcast. I'm your host, Stephanie Kwong, and each week I'll bring you an inspiring guest with an empowering message to help you rise higher and live your best life. Each guest shares their time of struggle and setback and what specific mindsets, tools, practices, or habits they use to overcome so that you can apply them to your life. This show is to remind you that you're not alone and that there's always a pathway up. Thanks for spending some time with me today. I'm grateful to be on this journey with you. Our struggles are a call for us to rise. So here we go. Let's dive deep now so we can rise higher together. Welcome back to the Rise Higher podcast. Steph Kwong here. And you guys, I am so stoked for you to hear today's guest, the amazing Nick Onken, who is a brilliant photographer, podcast host, and creative entrepreneur devoted to inspiring the world to create their moments and create their life. Now, Nick has photographed personalities such as Justin Bieber, Usher, and Jessica Alba, and he's photographed print campaigns for international brands such as Nike, Coca-Cola, and Adidas, and his work has been published in magazines like Condé Nast Traveler, Cosmopolitan, and Marie Claire. And on his podcast, Nick has interviewed celebrities such as Usher, Scooter Braun, Stacey London, and others. And he also photographs for the charity Pencils of Promise, as he believes that education is the root problem solver of our world. Now, in this episode, we get raw and real. And you know, I deeply appreciate Nick for going there with me. Because it takes a lot to open up and be super vulnerable about where you're at. And so Nick shares his journey starting off as a graphic designer to getting clear of his passion to be a photographer and how he pursued it with a whole lot of hustle and grit, racking up over 10,000 hours of practice to create massive success. Now, we also drop in deep today about Nick's struggles and when things started to slow down for him and his work. You know, he started losing bids and he hit a series of rejection after rejection, which led to one of the biggest downturns of his mental and emotional wellness. So Nick gets raw and real about the pain of rejection, judgment, and other challenges he's been going through. And he also shares all the beautiful inner work that he's been doing to heal, to rise up, and start lighting his own path again. Now, as Nick shares in this episode, the creative journey, it's really hard, and not a lot of people can do it, and you really have to learn how to handle the ups and the downs, and they come and go. And sometimes you feel on top of the world, and sometimes you don't, and you really have to learn how to manage those to really progress and keep going. So on today's podcast, we cover so many amazing things to help you move forward, and some of the things that we chat about are how to discover and embrace your true passion, following your must versus what everyone in society tells you that you should do, how to mentally and emotionally manage the ups and downs of business, why emotional intelligence is key to every successful person's career, how the mindset game is the biggest game you'll ever play in life, how to not measure your worth with your work, how to hack your way out of your inner critic, the importance of learning to embrace rejection to create success. And Nick also shares his 21 tools to get out of a funk. And you guys, these tools are gold. And I know I've definitely used many of them when I've felt the funk. So I hope you're ready, because guys, let's dive in right now with Nick. And here we go. Welcome, Nick Onken, to the Rise Higher podcast.
Thanks for having me. Woo-woo!
I'm so excited that you're here and really grateful that I got to manifest you while you were in LA, because I know you're a busy man.
life is busy, but not all the time. The ups and downs is what we're here to talk about.
It totally is.
But yeah, we're all human. We're here. We're talking about the same world.
Yeah. I'm actually going to be totally transparent. This is actually a take two of the start. I started recording with Nick and I realized on my gear, I had only had his microphone on. And so mine was off, which is awesome.
Which is okay. This is all good. I was just telling Stephanie that I did the same thing with Scooter Braun when I first interviewed him. It was one of my first two or three interviews. He had no idea what a podcast was. And we made it through. We made it through.
Yeah. It was fun. Gratefully, I think we were at like a 3-minute mark and you were at what, 15? But still,
yeah.
Imagine going through the entire interview.
Well, I did. Another friend of mine that I interviewed, for some reason, the computer just stopped. And it, like, we recorded 15 to 20, almost 30 minutes of it and start over.
That sucks.
Yeah. Random.
Human moments.
But technology happens. Or like that.
Just like that.
Just like that right there.
I turned off my notifications and my computer still screamed at us.
For some reason, it still likes to do that. But
I'm going to blame it on Mercury retrograde because I think we're in it right now.
I think it's going on, which is like, stay away from everything electronic.
Yeah. So, and I love sharing that stuff because, again, if anybody's doing stuff in the world, it's like crap happens. It's really how you just pivot and keep it going.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of which, Nick and I, or you and I, got to drop in a couple days ago at lunch, which I was so grateful for because I feel like grabbing quality time with people, for me, can be a bit more rare than common lately.
Yeah.
And I've really just been opening up more to be able to drop in with people more. And so was thankful for that time at Takaya Organica.
As am I.
Which I said earlier on First Take, I was like, thanks to Nick, that was my third time eating there this week.
Yes. And it's a very delicious place. It was the second time I've been there in my life. So, you know, it's I got to keep adding good spots to my LA food list because there's not a ton of them. You know, I lived here 10 years ago. And there was nothing here, like a handful of restaurants. And now the food scene is on the rise. I think there's a lot of New Yorkers moving out to LA. So they're bringing
all
really?
Their,
yeah. I have tons of friends who've moved from New York and they're all out here. All my,
wow.
Yeah. All my baller friends.
All your baller friends. What's having them schlep out west now?
I think, that's a good question. I mean, I think it's like a lot about people are settling down and it's like easier to settle down out here. And I don't know. For me, like, I think if I was to move back out here, I don't want to be in a relationship and, you know, everything is just so all over the place here.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think people are just kind of like wanting to get in the sun. And I think if they build their careers to a certain place in New York, they can end up moving out here and not having to like run around everywhere.
Yeah. Speaking of which, careers.
Careers.
Oh, careers. So fun. I would love for you to share a bit about what you do. I mean, you're such an incredible talent, Nick. I mean, I know you do art across a lot of different mediums, or you started out and now you're just like top-notch, incredible photographer. I've always loved looking at your pictures. But I'd love for you to share a bit about what you do and kind of your journey.
Yeah, my journey. Well, right now photography has been my primary medium of choice in the world of artistic creation and making money. Making a living with your art is not the easiest thing to do in the world. It's so subjective, so many different things, so many different variables that go into getting hired for your craft. But I started as a graphic designer. I was born in Seattle and I did graphic design, got my degree there, worked for a book publishing company, designed book covers for a couple of years, and then went freelance. And freelance graphic design. And then through that, I picked up a digital camera to shoot photos for my design work. And I just like started enjoying it. I didn't know what I was doing. I was just playing around. And I ended up convincing a nonprofit design client of mine to split the expenses on a trip to Africa to build them a photo library. And I had no clue what I was doing. I literally was like, you know, my buddy got back and he from Kenya and he has an IT company. He was like, they just flew me to Africa and I donated my time and I built an IT network for them. I was like, I want to do that. That sounds amazing. but graphic design, you don't really have to be there for it. So I was like, at the time, I'd kind of already started taking some photos. Like, well, maybe I could take some photos for them. And perfect. So I pitched them the idea and they were like, yeah, that sounds great. And I was like, wait, really? Okay, yes, yes. Let's do this. Let's do this. So we planned the trip. It was 2 months. I went to 4 countries in Africa, 4 countries in Europe.
Wow.
It was Zimbabwe, Uganda, Kenya, and Burundi. And if you've never been to the developing world before, it'll change your life.
Mm-hmm.
It changed my life in multiple ways, especially being immersed in a world of poverty. And you see people that are very happy with what they have, and they'll give you the shirt off your back, off their back. And
it's amazing how the like mindset and how different it is there. Like, and just goes to show that abundance is not what you have; it's within your soul.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
absolutely. And you know, sometimes it takes us a long time to really realize that, or or learn about that. Or it is a journey. And but that was the start of my journey in that sense. And I mean, I learned so much about how foreign aid actually destroys cultures and really hurts them. It hurts it creates different mindsets. It creates dependency mindsets. And so I got to see like an inner working of the developing world, which was fascinating to me. And so I think that trip in and of itself was such a huge impact in my life in just, you know, embracing and embodying like a piece of giving back to and everything that I do from then on, which is why I've started working with Pencils of Promise a few years ago, and they build schools for kids. And so I've always wanted to integrate philanthropy into everything that I've done. So
incredible.
That was the start of it. And then I got back and I was like, wow, that was amazing. People are flying me around the world to take pictures. I could do this as a career. I'll take it. I'll take it. And so I just kind of, but it still took me a while to really adapt because I was on the track to be a graphic designer. That's what I wanted. So to be able to let go of that and jump into a new career identity of that sort is a whole different, you know, it took me a while.
Yeah. I love for you dropping about that because I know there's a lot of people who have an idea of what they think they should do. And then there's something else that's pulling them in a different direction, but might not make sense. How did you, like, what was your transition to release that old identity of I'm a graphic designer to really embrace what you're doing now?
I think it was just really about the curiosity and finding the love for photography. And that was what was driving me towards it. I just ended up loving it so much more than graphic design. And eventually I was like, well, if I ever want to like make it in graphic design, I can't really just keep freelancing. I need to go work for somebody and learn like how to run a firm and how to like go up the ladder. Cause that's a whole different, it's a whole different ball game to learn design and to be a graphic designer. And I was like, I don't really see myself going to work for somebody after being freelance for a few years, because even though I was Poe, the freedom and being able to do whatever I wanted, mm-hmm. whenever I wanted, was so much more rewarding.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to create whatever I wanted, so much more rewarding.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, what I would say to people is keep exploring. And, you know, I don't know if you heard of this woman, Elle Luna, but she's an artist and she wrote a book called The Crossroads of Should and Must, which is, I think, a great, I had her on my podcast and she's amazing, but she actually was like UX designer for Uber in the early days. Like she helped redesign Uber and was like Mailbox or something like that. And then they launched Mailbox after that. And then she was like, I'm done. I'm going to be a painter. So she just followed her instinct or her must of being a painter, went and bought a studio or got a studio because she'd like, I mean, part of it jumping off into a freelance world is creating your sandbox and your runway. So you've got to save up enough money to live, but you also have to create structure around practicing your craft and like give yourself time to do that. And she, you know, she did that. So her book is about following your must versus what everybody in society tells you you should do, your parents tell you you should do, and all these things.
I think even in your own mind, sometimes we should ourselves as well. Like, I should stay in this profession because I've spent how much money in law school, med school, whatever school, and I shouldn't just jump and do this other thing. And
totally.
So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the biggest should is our own shoulds. Is
we got some big shoulds sometimes.
Yeah. Don't. Just chucked a big shit right on the floor over there.
Stop shitting on yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Stop shitting on yourself and do what you must do. And, you know, obviously be calculated about it. Don't just like throw yourself out. And I think there's something to be said about jumping off the cliff and weaving the parachute, but I also think there's something to be said about creating your own runway and creating the space, your sandbox, to create the time around creating. Because if it's the one thing that I've learned through this journey is that if you want to make a living as an artist, you have to develop your craft to the point where people actually want to pay you for it. And that takes time. I mean, 10,000 hours is a very true and accurate thing for me. Like when if I look back, the hours, the time that it took me to get to the space where people are paying me like real money for my photography was a good 10,000 hours. It was a good 5 years, you know, of day in and day out practicing my craft to get there.
What did you do to support yourself in the time that you were developing your craft?
Well, luckily, like I had my design, I could still pick up design, freelance design jobs while I was practicing my photography. Mm-hmm. And that took, that just like allowed me to have the flexibility of my schedule, but still make money. Mm-hmm. And also I lived in a small basement of a house in Seattle that cost me $300 a month. And I, you know, I call those the ramen days or the spaghetti days, where I would like make a pot of spaghetti and make it last every lunch for the whole week. You know, mm-hmm. I was scraping by, and that's part of that journey is you've got to like cut your expenses so that you can put all that, any extra money into your business, your craft, and invest back into yourself. Mm-hmm. And that was the start of my photography journey. And then it just kind of started taking off. Like it took me a few years. I got a job for Nike and shooting pro sports players. And then I thought I was in, and then I didn't see anything like that for 2 years. And then finally I got another Nike job, and then like it kind of like started snowballing a little bit. And a couple of years later I got an agent I got an agent here in LA, and that lasted about 8 months, and realized that she wasn't right. And then found another agent in New York, and that's what really catalyzed my career. And I was doing like a lot of stuff in the lifestyle genre. So, you know, I really wanted to shoot commercial lifestyle advertising campaigns. And I picked up a rep in New York. And that's kind of what really gave me the start. And a few months later, got my first like big ad campaign, full production.
What was it?
Secret deodorant.
Oh.
Yeah. Procter & Gamble. which was great. It was cool. I mean, we shot down in Miami, and it was literally like the shot was this girl jumping into a pool at a pool party.
Okay.
You wouldn't imagine, you know, you're talking like $100,000 production for one day.
Wow.
And the amount of everything and technical stuff that went into that, and like even just getting the job, you know, but I think having the agent gave me the backing and the credibility to get it, which catalyzed that. And so from there, it was just, my career just really took off. I was shooting commercial campaigns left and right. You know, I was getting everything from Nike, Reebok, Adidas, Coca-Cola, Chevy, Walmart, like everything. And I was doing like a campaign a month, at least, if not two. That was 2009, 2010. And then 2011, things started to slow down. And then it just like started slowing and slowing. And I started losing all these jobs, losing all these bids. And I think it was an interesting time. And actually, like, that was probably one of the biggest downturns of my emotional mental wellness. Cause like, I think, you know, when you're growing and growing and growing, you haven't experienced success. Yeah, like, fine, this is just the hustle. But when you experience success and then you don't realize, you think you're on fire and you don't realize that there are ups and downs to businesses. That's just the nature of it. It hit me really hard. And it was, that's actually when I, like, a few, it was like 2012. So just like 2011, 2012, it just, things started slowing down. I started losing all these bids. You know, you do, the idea is that you get, you know, you bid on like four or five jobs, you get one. And these are big campaigns. I mean, these are like huge. It's like so much work just to get one of these jobs. And then things started trickling down and I started getting rejected a lot more and a lot more. Like, the jobs would just go to other people. They would disappear. And I really took that. I took it really hard. Like, it just, and the more you get rejected, the more you feel it, the more. And then there was a point a couple of years later where I think I lost 20 bids in a row.
Whoa.
And then I just, like, I was like a distraught mess. Like, I felt like I was breaking down. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to handle it. And, you know, good friend of mine, Mr. Lewis Howes. Him and I became friends. And I'd started shooting for Pencils of Promise back in 2009. So that relationship was also, that was also a benefit as a really good side of things. And I think even though I was still doing all right, you know, I was still doing jobs and I was still doing all this stuff, I think just coming from such a high point and then feeling that decline and feeling like starting to get more rejections and having more space and time in between jobs started to really affect me.
Yeah.
And so I met Lewis through kind of the Pencils of Promise community and we became friends. And then, was it like a year? I think it was 2013 or so, 14 maybe. He was telling me about this leadership training. And
I think it was 2013 because you were right before me.
Yeah, it could have been. Probably. Yeah, it was probably that. It's like, that's all a blur to me.
Yeah,
now at this point. But yeah, that was like a really, really low point for me. I was just like struggling to figure out what was going on. And I didn't know at the time that, you know, all this emotional intelligence stuff and how mindset is so important in every successful person's career. All the people that I've interviewed, mindset, the mindset game is the biggest game
it's everything.
You'll ever
play. It's everything. I mean, that's what I do when I work with my clients. I work with entrepreneurs and high impact influencers and, you know, they have the strategy. It's not the strategy. It's just like everyone knows how to lose weight, right? I was use that as an example because it's so simple, but there's something that holds you back. What is that? It's mindset. And so when you get your brain in the game, when it's like actually working for you instead of against you, you can achieve whatever the hell you want. But most people don't take the time to upgrade their brain to match up to what it is that they're going after and want to manifest.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's like a daily and a moment to moment practice.
Yes.
And, you know, I think the more you experience rejection and the more you experience downs from the ups, that's where it's really important. That's the path to mastery. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so Lewis introduced me to the course and I was just like, at this point, I was like, I'll do it. I'll do anything. Like, I'm just like, let's figure this. Figure it out. I actually skipped Summit Series.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. Which I was bummed about.
Committed you were.
That was Summit Outside. And I heard that was one of the best ones. Oh. And then who knows what happened from there, but
yeah.
but yeah, like I ended up going and that was, it was a life changing program and I learned a lot out of it. And, that was my first entree into the world of
personal growth,
personal development. And, you know, a big part of that was what catalyzed me to start my podcast as well and like really dive into the life of creatives, because I realized that the creative journey is so difficult. Not a lot of people can do it. And you have to really learn how to handle the ups and the downs and they come and go. Sometimes you feel on top of the world, sometimes you don't. And if you got to learn how to manage those to really progress and keep going.
When you first did that course, what were kind of the big epiphanies or aha moments for you, or even distinctions that you learned that made a huge difference for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing that I learned was how I grew up with a fear of judgment. And I see how that plays out in my whole life. But I grew up in a Christian church, Christian home, and I just like organized religion now to me is just so I can't like it. I'm trying to not be angry at it for, you know, but it, you know, what it is, what it is. And, you learn from that. I walked away, and this is the thing, is you realize that like your parents did the best they could.
Yep.
With what they had. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, for me, I didn't even realize, I realized in this program that I walked away from my upbringing with a huge fear of judgment, because in the church, you have to be like, you always have to be good. You always have to be, you know, being bad was not acceptable. Like you have to always do things right in the eyes of God and like, yada, yada, yada. And, you know, I think that can really have an effect on someone when they're always expected to be perfect and not allowed to have flaws or not allowed to do things that are outside of the church or think of things that are outside the church. And, you know, that I realized like how much that affects me today. Like there's a subconscious underlying thing that just like, it's a visceral reaction to criticism. Really. That's mm-hmm. like, now that's my trigger, is just being criticized. And obviously picking a career where it's all about external validation was just not, you know, it's that was a passion, but it's a space where you have to really learn how to separate your value from, you know, who you are. You know, for me, it became about who I was shooting and what I was shooting, and the external world that was giving me the validation versus like internal validation, creating my self-worth. And I still battle with that every day. I mean, you just, in the world of, I mean, I'm sure any actor or anybody can, any artist can really relate to this, where it's such a rejection-based career in terms of getting jobs. Like you have to like learn how to accept that and mm-hmm. learn how to love it. Mm-hmm. I haven't really learned how to love it. I'm still trying to practice. Learn how to love it.
So when you, you said that the rejection was kind of permeating all areas of your life, what were kind of some specific ways that you noticed that fear was impacting you?
I think it was just like fear of being accepted and.
Or of not being accepted or of accepted.
Yeah. Being accepted or not being accepted in the world of, in the world of life, because like, who was I without this identity? Mm. So I think that was, you know, the fear was really.
But did it have you feel like uncomfortable with yourself when you're around people, or did you monitor yourself because you didn't want to say the wrong thing or do the wrong thing? Like how?
Yeah. I mean, I've always had a fear of speaking in general and in a group of more than two.
Thank God it's just me and my dog right now here.
Yeah.
We're good.
Yeah. And I mean, the program helped a lot through that. I still find myself, I just get anxiety around like fear of being judged in what I say. I think that was the biggest thing.
And that's common, Nick. I mean, I know I've struggled with that too. You know?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's funny. It's like, I've never felt like I was very articulate, or I had a hard time, I have a hard time remembering information mm-hmm. and bringing that up. And I think that's always been, you know, some a big insecurity, which is why I started the podcast as well, is to mm-hmm. like challenge myself through that.
Yeah. And it's so interesting what I've discovered in my own journey, because a lot of my worth I had also placed on what I did. And wanting the validation externally, same thing, and being my own worst critic inside. And I realized that really the judgment was all me. It had nothing to do with anybody else. And yeah, sometimes they might judge, but still it's about them. But the reason why I had personally struggled so much was like, if I actually, I always say this, like it's our inner child, right? Like acting up, trying to just get our attention or just wants to be loved and be seen. And so how would we treat that child if they were you know, scared of being rejected, or they just wanted love and validation. And then I was like listening to my own thoughts some days, and I'm like, shit, if someone actually listened, like if I talked to my little kid that way, I'd be probably arrested for child abuse, basically, because it's so cruel up in my head, or used to be some days. I've really worked so hard to monitor it. It's not a perfect practice, but that's where really I feel the key of the judgment has to be reworked, is the judgment that we have on ourselves versus even being afraid of the judgment that we're going to get from others. That's my own experience.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. The inner critic is,
oh my God,
is a rager. Oh. My inner critic's been raging for the last like couple months. And my friend, as I said, what you were just talking about, I have a friend who's an executive coach as well. And it's really the inner critic. He's like, you wouldn't, like, if imagine little Nick was like coming up to you and just being like, I suck, and like, yeah, and what, like, how am I gonna do this, and like, am I worth anything, and blah blah blah, blah. You're not gonna be like, well, shut the fuck up, kid. No, you're gonna like,
well, let's
be
hope
kind
not.
To him, and you're gonna be like, it's okay, you're gonna do great, don't worry, like,
you got this.
I'm like, okay,
don't care what they think, they suck anyway. No, I'm just kidding.
I need to practice this more. So
yeah,
that's what I'm working on now.
What have you, so in that process, because I know you said again that the program had helped, was there anything that you took away from there, or anything that you're doing now that's really, really supporting you in managing the inner critic, or even breaking apart that fear of rejection?
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of things. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, from my journey in this whole matrix deep dive, if you will, it started with the surface of awareness, which I think is like programs like Landmark and MITT and Tony Robbins. I think they're great for an introductory into the mm-hmm. awareness of thoughts and how thoughts create your actions and actions create results. And so if you change your thoughts, you create your result, or you change your results. I think that's a great way of looking at it. And I think these programs really help you to become conscious of these things. But then I think the next layer down is your subconscious, as you know.
Yes, my favorite thing ever to talk about.
And that's a whole other journey. That's something that you need external coaching for, obviously, or external help, because like I think some of the ways to get through that is like hypnosis. And I mean, obviously, you could probably tell me way more about how to get through those other, these subconscious, you know, breaking the subconscious neural nets. And you know, obviously we create stories, the stories that we create in our heads create neural net patterns that we even become like huge raging critics, if you will, right? Like the more you think about something, the more that neural net builds,
yeah,
and that inner critic is like, mm-hmm. no, you really do suck at this. And then like the more you think about it,
and here's all the evidence how you suck. Let me pull that all and show you right in your face. And you're like, you're an asshole.
Exactly. And then we think about all this stuff and then we start manifesting it, because then it goes a level deeper, right? Like the energetic quantum physics level, you know, and then that's like kind of, you know, the spiritual level as well. And, you know, that's kind of the space that I've been exploring as of like the last year, is kind of where those three worlds meet. Because I think there is something to the matrix. I think we are plugged into the matrix. And I think if we can access like the back end of the matrix, if you will, mm-hmm. whatever that means, mm-hmm. whatever world is out there.
Where's
that we can't
Neo?
Explain.
We got to ask him.
Exactly. You know, I think, you know, my observation has been, especially, I don't know if you've ever read Sapiens.
No.
Oh my God.
Tell me all about it.
Sapiens is the best book ever.
Is it going to change my life?
It is. It's okay. Like a 10,000 foot view of humanity from like Neanderthals, and how Neanderthals, you know, met Homo sapiens, and then Neanderthals became extinct, and then Homo sapiens became tribes, and then they needed to like communicate. So they created language, and they created bartering, and they created money, and then eventually created religion, right? Because, you know, we're all trying to explain this connection between ourselves and like whatever higher power is out there. Mm-hmm. I don't think any of us will ever have any sort of accurate thing, but like all religions say that, you know, everybody's trying to explain it, and then they all wage wars around it, and then the people in power use it to control people. And interesting thing about Sapiens is that is that, you know, he taught, we all know that like the three main religions, you know, Islam, Judaism, and Christianity all stem from the same geographic location, like Israel and Middle East. And then it just kind of spread from there. But what, you know, what people don't realize is there was other humans and Homo sapiens on the other side of the world creating their own religions because they were trying to, you know, everybody is trying to explain what it is. What is this connection between our own human souls and the universe? And who knows? Who knows if we'll ever know? But I think created, you know, where I came from, where religion created such a right and a wrong and a good and a bad, I think that just like messes people up.
Yeah.
In my opinion. And creates a, you know, creates those raging critics. It creates the downside. So, you know, for me, I'm on a journey to like figure out, you know, what it is, what, how can you kind of hack your way through that and understand it more? And funny enough, I just did a podcast this last week on 21 tools to get through a funk.
Yes. Do you have it? I know you were trying to share with me some of them off the top of your head at lunch the other day, but do you have, can you recall right now?
Well, we might have to look it up, but okay. I can kind of like jot through a few of them, but 21's a lot to remember here.
So tell me the URL. I will pull it up here.
It's neonradio.com/EP143.
Radio.com/EP143?
Yeah. But, you know, I think the first step is like awareness. Oh, there we are. Hey.
Oh, look at Nick's cute face.
Hey.
So feel free to go check out Nick's podcast and this episode as well. I love it.
Yeah. So I'll just highlight a few of these because, I mean, you know, it's, I think the biggest one is having perspective. And I was working with a friend of mine who's a coach, and he suggested this book, Mastery, not the one by Greenfield. It's like another one, linked up here. We'll link it up in the show notes. Cause I was trying to find it on Audible and I can't, but he sent me a couple, like infographics on it. But like the path to mastery is really getting through the down curves. And I think that was like, I wish I would have put that in the podcast, but I didn't learn it until after the podcast. But like, if you look at things, you know, you go up, if you're beginning, you're beginning, you're beginning, and then you go up and you hit success and then you see a dip. It's like, if you're a true master, you're going to do everything that it takes to get through that dip.
Ooh, yeah.
And that's, you know, that's where the funks come from, right? The funks come from like seeing the future and seeing where you want to be and not being there. Or, you know, and we can go all into the whole idea of like the power of now and being, you know, all human suffering comes from living in your head in the future or the past. But, you know, I think that where we're at now for me in this podcast, it was about, you know, the first thing is taking perspective. That's the perspective, is like, you will get through this. And the key word is through.
Ooh, yes. I love it.
This isn't the end. Mm-hmm. If you think of it as you will get through this, you'll do everything you can to get through it. Mm-hmm. The second thing is being aware, you know, awareness, you know, so like we were talking about with the emotional intelligence stuff, is like stepping back and becoming aware of the thoughts that you're actually thinking and creating, because those thoughts are what are creating your actions, which manifest into everything that results in your life. So, and then the third thing is, you are not your thoughts. Mm-hmm. something to remember. practicing presence is kind of goes back to that power of now, right? Like if we're living in the power of now, or we're living in the now, we're not worried about the future or the past. And that a lot of that comes down to things like meditation, bringing your awareness to the present moment, de-stressing your body. I practice Vedic meditation or Ziva meditation, which is Emily Fletcher's program, who I just had on the podcast as well. And she talks a lot about, you know, using this type of meditation as a way to de-stress your body and get the stress, because stress is and trauma is stored in your central nervous system.
It sure is.
And a lot of times that manifests into physical pain and physical injury. So if you don't handle it, you don't take care of it, and that stress builds up, you could end up in a world of hurt physically. And I've been seeing that happen left and right. And like,
happened to me.
Yeah.
My skin.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And you figured out how to cure it through or get rid of it through de-stressing and
totally
doing and spiritual healing stuff
and deep diving into the feelings that I had been suppressing. Like I was working with an incredible holistic doctor, and what came forward was, and I actually mentioned this when I did episode 13, is that there was so much anger I had suppressed because I didn't want to be identified as an angry person. And anger gets shamed in our society. Don't be mad because it's bad. And I had pushed a lot of that down, plus a lot of trauma that was stored there, a lot of deep depression, sadness, anxiety that I'd been living with for so long. And I thought I had a handle on it, but there was still more to go. And it just erupted out in my body. And when I started really like diving in, which was sucky, but I knew I would get through. See, I got that one in there, Nick.
There it is.
That's actually what shifted the release of where my skin was able to heal. So
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I grew up in a home where anger was like very, very frowned upon. It was not okay. It was shamed. And I still have issues with showing anger. And it's something that's, you know, and I think, you know, anger, learning to know that anger is okay, but when it turns into aggression, that's not okay.
No, yeah.
When you start hurting other people, whether it's verbally or physically or whatever, that's not okay. Mm.
Or even hurting yourself, because there's healthy ways of releasing anger.
Yeah. Not raging on you, not letting your inner critic rage so hard angrily.
Yeah. You tell that inner critic to shut up.
Yeah, a couple others. Just keep moving, exercise. I mean, I've been like working out like crazy, and I'm not like, I actually hate working out. It's not my thing. I've never loved it. I do activities that I've created a whole workout program at home because I just like going to the gym takes too much time. So I had a personal trainer friend create a program. This is years ago, but I still do it, that boosts my metabolism and keeps me like, it's a short interval kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I just started boxing, which is a lot of fun.
That's one way to get out anger.
Yeah, you can punch things.
Yeah, great. And it's safe.
It's great. And boxing is super technical. So I think training your brain in another, like playing in another medium or playing in another avenue and trying and play and learning something new also kind of helps get your brain into a different flow, which is also good for getting out of a funk. Eating healthy, obviously. You know, I think there's a lot more mindfulness and consciousness around the idea of what you eat and mm-hmm. how that affects you. And so I've been eating a lot less carbs and sugars and processed foods as much as I can. You know, not completely, but, you know, regulation. So I think, you know, balancing that out and is super helpful. And now I can even like, if I eat something that even like, gluten probably as I noticed that like my stomach is not as I feel it a lot more mm-hmm. especially once you eat a lot cleaner. I mean get a coach. We've got a great coach here.
Woo-hoo! Hit me up, people.
That's right Coaches are important, and I think having mentorship is
it's huge.
And interestingly enough, it's something I've learned in the world of photography. It's actually really hard to find a mentor in the photography space. I mean, if you're talking like mindset and things like that, I think there's a lot of people that can help, but like finding a mentor in the photography space is really difficult. Yeah. And the artist space in general, because there's a lot of competition and there's a lot of different things like that. Something I've struggled with is finding a mentor myself in that space. Create something every day, even if it sucks.
Yes. I think that also, well, one, it gets your brain going in a different direction, right? In the creativity flow. But two, creating something every day, even if it sucks, knowing that allows you to practice failing to some degree. Or not, I mean, failure is a perspective, right? But if you just let yourself be and you don't care about the outcome, I think that's...
Absolutely.
I'm hearing that. I'm saying that out loud to myself, by the way. That's why I'm saying this.
Yeah, like, and it all goes back to the...
Let it suck. It's okay.
Well, it goes back to mastery, right? Like, you know, even if you don't feel like it and if you still create something and you're kind of pushing yourself through that, you're keeping the motion going so that eventually something clicks. I was just reading Big Magic.
Oh, love that book.
Which the first time I read it, I was kind of like, but I was in a different space. And I think that that book is really great for somebody who's seen success and then like goes through a funk of like the next, what's the next thing? Or how do I evolve? Or how do I, you know, find, connect to that inspiration again, mm-hmm. as which is what I've been going through, you know, and trying to connect and evolve and move forward.
So I know you mentioned that the past few months have been really hard for you. And as you've reflected on those past few months, what awareness, first and foremost, has come up for you? And then I want to ask you another question.
Of course.
What awareness in the sense of what have I learned?
Yeah, what have you seen that's been maybe blocking you in this time that's creating the funk? Or holding you in the funk, like what awareness is there for you?
Good question. I think there's the awareness from, you know, what I've been trying to figure out is I know I'm good, but I think the, you know, when you experience a long dry spell, when you've been on fire before, creates a different, it affects your self-confidence. It's affected my self-confidence. Creative confidence, especially, you know, and business confidence, and even walking into a situation and questioning myself even more, because, you know, and that's where it's like the challenge of not equating how good you are to whether you're getting calls and work is coming in and things like that. So it's pushing that duality of knowing that you're good, but also striving to become better and, you know, striving for the work that I still want to be shooting and creating. So I think there's becoming more of an awareness there. I think there's still things that I'm trying to figure out. And, you know, I also went through a breakup last year. So that also just affected me personally, which affects my career, which affects a lot of different things.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of time, you know, you're taking time to heal and while still moving forward.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of these things, you wrote this and you did this episode of the 21 ways to get out of funk. Is it because these are all the things that you're doing?
Yeah, this is all stuff that I've been practicing and as I've been going through this funk of just like, I don't know, it's weird to wake up in the morning, you're just like, ugh, mm-hmm. you know, and it gets exhausting. But I think, you know, I've had them before and then they kind of go away, you know, and then eventually if you do enough, I think, you know, self-care.
Oh, we love self-care.
Self-care is key. And I think a lot of these things that I just talked about are huge components of that. And I think even going into like energetic healing and things like that, because I think there's so many, like if you go really, really below the surface, below the subconscious, into your energy. Your energetic body. I think there's blocks that happen. I don't understand all this stuff, but I just like stuff that I've like learned about recently. And, you know, some of it's off the Woo Cliff for me, but, but, you know, I think there's a lot more scientific research happening around energy. And how the energy that we have is connected to everything and the quantum physics of everything and, you know, all of that stuff. So I'm learning more about that. That's like still a journey that's fascinating me right now and how that plays into life and where you're headed.
I mean, one thing I want to throw out there that's been a huge key for me, is really being mindful of the self-talk. Like that's a huge part of the funk piece, I think, for me at least, of like, what are we actually telling ourselves while we're in the funk as well? Oof. Because that either keeps you there and makes it worse or can create a little bit of relief if you're able to shift that.
Right.
And then like you've been so beautifully saying is like deep diving into more layers that we have because our thoughts have energy, and that energy goes into our body, then creates the feeling vibration that we have, which then that energy of our emotions gets put out into the world. And there is, you know, a quantum field out there that everything we want is already in existence in energetic form. Mm-hmm. But depending on the energy that we create ourselves to vibrate at, our feelings, which are the strongest electromagnetic energetic waves, that will attract or push away the very thing that you want. And so that's why the thought piece is so key. And then really being able to manage the emotional state as well. Part of it is manage your thoughts, you'll manage your emotions, but some of those emotions too need to be handled because they're trapped in your body, like mine were, of the anger and the sadness, all the stuff I talked about earlier. Yeah. So working on all levels is super key. And then to me too, developing that practice of spirituality, knowing that you're not alone. There's something greater that's got your back. And if you can trust in that and have some faith, it's like gold. At least it has been for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
I agree. Agree with that.
Yay! Nick, I love you. I'm so grateful for this conversation. It's been like really deeply fulfilling for me to hear everything that you've been sharing and for your raw authenticity and just, you know, where you're at. Because I think so often many of us get there. I know I have. And I know I can feel really alone when I've gotten in my funks. But I think by us all sharing that we're not alone, we all get there, and there's always a way up and out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is really powerful. So thank you.
Thank you.
Cool. So I got three final questions for you.
Yeah, shoot.
To close this baby out. First thing is, what's something unique about you that most people don't know?
Oh. That's a good question. I used to sell Cutco knives.
You did? My brother did too. And he sold only one set to my mom and then he quit.
It's such a funny little like funny thing, the way they set it all up. It's hilarious.
Dude, those knives are sick though.
They're great. I mean, I sliced my finger on a demo one time. Well, the woman like was cutting, you like hold the rope and she like whoosh and it sliced my finger. I was like, yeah, it's not supposed to happen.
Okay, Cutco knife seller. Nice. And apparently the scissors, we tested them, can cut through pennies.
Yeah.
They're amazing.
Yeah, anyway. Great knives. You know, I still have mine. I still use them. I love to cook, actually. That might be another thing.
Oh, cool.
I do. I'm not like an expert chef by any stretch, but I do.
What do you cook?
I cook a lot of things. I cook, one of my favorites is like this tomato basil or tomato kale baked eggs dish. That's like a shakshuka. I love that. Like a little cauliflower rice.
Yum.
Concoction, you know,
so good.
Like that bacon wrapped chicken.
Ooh, when I'm in New York, I might need you to cook some shishuka for me, you call that.
Oh, yeah.
And when you're in a really dark place, what's your go to to get out? I know you shared so many beautiful ones, but what's your kind of go to?
Lately has been meditation. I think the meditation that I've been practicing is like, it's almost like just taking out the trash, your mind trash. And for some reason, I always feel much more grounded in the morning. Like especially in the morning, that's the first thing I do is meditate every morning for 20 minutes. And I think, and something I didn't mention that was in the podcast too, is like just surrounding yourself with amazing, positive people that will create your energy and help take your energy higher. And that goes with also like listening to books or podcasts that take your state, that change your state. You know, I love to listen to a podcast in the morning while I'm working out because it changes my state for the day of something that I'm like interested in learning about or that, you know, lately it's been Oprah's Super Soul podcast. She's got so many good guests on there. You're just like down this rabbit hole. But, those are a couple go-tos.
Mm, beautiful. Thank you. Those are great ones. And knowing what you know now, what advice would you give to your 10-year-old self?
My 10-year-old self. Somewhere along the lines of... everything will be okay. Like there's no right or wrong. I think it just goes back to this whole religion thing of like, I would say like express your emotions and know that that's okay, and explore the world and know that that's okay. Explore different, just explore your spirituality for that matter, and that's okay. I would say that's the biggest thing.
I love it. Nick, thank you again so much for being here today and for making this work. I appreciate you so much. I look forward to continuing to get to know you more. And thank you for shining your light and for all the wisdom that you shared on today's show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Nick is seriously the best. It's raw conversations like the one we just had that really fuels my soul. I mean, I just love connecting heart to heart, no masks, and that vulnerability. I mean, it is so good. You know, when we go through challenging times in our lives, when things don't look the way we want them to, it's such a beautiful invitation to deep dive within and remove what no longer serves us. You know, it has us release or redefine the stories, the beliefs, or the rules that we've picked up through life and agreed to that's been holding us back and creating suffering. And this is part of our growth and the pathway to creating the inner freedom that we all want, which is, again, to deep dive within and to remove what no longer serves us. So here's the thing, even if things aren't challenging, you know, it's really important to continuously evaluate our beliefs and unlearn the things that are holding us back, to upgrade our belief systems and our mindset to fit into the reality that we want to see, and to practice self-love, self-acceptance, and self-compassion. So if you're in a downturn right now, if you're struggling with judgment, rejection, or you're just feeling the funk, or maybe you're just ready to start elevating where you're at, I've got something to support you, because I know that the key to getting through any challenging time is having our own backs to support ourselves and to know that we can rise up. And it all starts with developing a loving relationship with yourself to do that. So if you need a little boost or kickstart to begin a self-loving relationship with yourself, go check out my free self-love gift that I've got for you. It's a free self-love kickstart that will give you some powerful practices to get you on your journey to owning your worth, rocking your confidence, and opening up to your own love to radically transform your life and the results that you can create. And you can download that free gift that I created just for you at stephaniekwong.com/self-love-kickstart. Also, if you want an extra boost of empowerment from Nick, go check out my Instagram at @IamStephanieKwong, where I've got a mini video of Nick sharing a really powerful practice to use to get out of a panic state. And it's actually something I use as well. And let me tell you, it works. So go check that out. All right. So if there's someone you know who could benefit from this episode, please, please, please share it with them. And if you got value from this episode and you want more, I would absolutely love for you to subscribe to the podcast. And if you feel called to leave me a 5-star review on iTunes, because that means we can support even more people to rise higher together. And for everything that we mentioned in today's episode and for all the links to connect with Nick, you can check it out in the show notes. And that's over at stephaniekwong.com/EP19. And of course, you can check out all my other podcast episodes there too. All right, guys, until next time, I'm sending you so much love.